welcome to the latest Briefings Direct Analyst Insights Edition, Volume 30. This periodic discussion and dissection of IT infrastructure-related news and events with a panel of industry analysts and guests comes to you with the help of our sponsors, charter sponsor Active Endpoints, maker of the Active VOS Visual Orchestration System, and also HP. We're coming to you via the HP Live podcast series on HP.com and through the Briefings Direct Network. I'm your host and moderator, Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Arbor Solutions. And our panel this week consists of Joe McKendrick. He's an independent analyst and prolific blogger on SOA and BI topics. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Hi, Dana. Glad to be here.
We're also joined by Brad Shimon. He's a Principal Analyst at Current Analysis. Hey, Brad.
Good day, Dana. Thanks for having me.
Jim Kubilis joins us. He's a senior analyst at Forrester Research. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Dana. Hi, everybody.
And Dave Linthicum, independent consultant, joins us this week. Thanks for coming, Dave.
Thanks, Dana. Thanks for having me back.
You know, we're going to be talking about the week of September 22nd, 2008 news. We're going to be looking at the HP announcements and other news made at Oracle Open World. We're going to be talking about VMware and virtualization and some of the events that have taken place recently, some announcements from Citrix out of that show. We're going to talk about cloud computing and the notion of on-premises or private clouds and how data portability might actually work among and between different clouds, both, I guess, public, if you will, and private. So I want to start our show this week with Jim Kubilis. Jim, you and I have both been here at the Oracle Open World in San Francisco. We had kind of an unusual announcement around a optimization between hardware and software by Oracle, which has traditionally been a software company. They introduced two Exadata products. I wonder if you could sort of fill our audience in a little bit on what Oracle did this week.
Yeah, what they did this week, Oracle, Larry Ellison announced from the main stage that Oracle has released in a partnership with HP a very high-end data warehousing appliance. Now, he, in fact, Larry didn't use the word appliance. That's, in fact, what it is. It's a pre-built, pre-configured, pre-optimized bundle of hardware, software, database, storage for very high-end data warehousing requirements. That's the, of course, the new HP. The actual name of it is the HP Oracle Database Machine, and it encompasses, or includes, I should say, the HP Oracle Exadata Storage Server, which is a grid storage layer that one of the key differentiators on that storage layer is that it puts the query processing in firmware in the storage subsystem, and as a result, it can greatly speed up the processing of very complex analytics. And what Oracle and HP have essentially done is sort of taken a page from Netezza's book here, because that is, of course, the distinguishing feature of the Netezza performance system data warehousing appliance, that they accelerate your data warehouse, your data marts, by putting the SQL processing back close to storage. But there's much more than simply sort of taking a page out of that book. What they did essentially is a shot across Teradata's bow, because this is Oracle's petabyte scale data warehousing solution platform, the Oracle Database Machine. And they demonstrated it at the show. It definitely screams. And it can scale, well, Oracle says it can scale with almost no limit. That remains to be seen. But it can definitely go much higher in terms of capacity than the current Oracle optimized warehouses that they've already begun to ship with HP and a variety of other partners. Right now, the Oracle optimized warehouses max out at several hundred terabytes. And like I said, the Oracle Database Machine with HP inside can go well beyond that. So really what this is it's a shot of both across Teradata's bow and across NetEase's bow, and then Ellison from the stage directly honed in on both of those competitors by name. And it was a very classic Larry Ellison, very assertive, very well put together presentation, but quite frankly, when you begin to analyze the various claims he made, they don't all hold up, or whether he's, of course, presenting a lot of the Oracle differentiated outside their full competitive industry context. So, but nonetheless, very impressive.
Now, this marks a departure for at least Oracle and HP on several different levels. On one hand, we have a combined hardware-software product from two different vendors. Also, we have a new parallelization process, architectural design, where the database and the storage are very close. The processing can take advantage of that in terms of the parallel processing and massively parallel processing. And we have fat pipes in the form of InfiniBand. So we have an architectural departure, we have a hardware-software departure, and then we also have this interesting alliance, HP and Oracle, making and selling a product together. How did this strike you, Brad Shimon?
Well, I was shocked, absolutely shocked, simply because, you know, historically Oracle has strayed so far away from the appliance market that it's been, you know, surprising to me on a number of occasions when I've spoken with them about acquisitions. Actually, they made one earlier this year where they acquired a company that had an appliance that was very successful, and they chose to simply kill it outright because they, quote-unquote, did not want to play in the space. You know, that said, I'm glad to see this happening. I really am, and I think that, you know, HP is a good partner with them because I don't feel that the two companies really bump into one another in terms of, you know, Oracle's core you know, constituency. So I think it's a good play all around, and I'm glad to see Oracle finally getting onto this. Now if only they would release, you know, parts of their middleware in an appliance, I would be very happy.
And in fact, Brad, Larry indicated that they seem to have some plans, though they haven't really unwrapped any details. They seem to have some plans to appliantize, if that's a word, more and more of the Fusion middleware stack.
Good to hear, Jim, and it's not just Oracle too, by the way. I've talked to a number of vendors in the last couple weeks that you wouldn't anticipate to hear this from. I can't tell you who they are because they told me not to say, but they sorry guys, but anyway, they were saying that was definitely an area they wanted to go. We're talking about some of the big name you know, middleware stack vendors that really want to pick this up, so it's good to hear.
I've been picking up on this appliance business, too, now. IBM has been into this with Data Power for a while now, but it hasn't really extended it out as widely as I was expecting. I've also heard from TIBCO about the possibility of appliances perhaps around complex event processing. So, yeah, I think we're going to see more of this. But, Brad, I want to go back for 1 second to the HP-Oracle relationship. It almost seems now that Oracle has anointed HP at some level as a preferred hardware supplier on storage, if not other aspects of hardware. What does that mean for EMC and some of the other storage providers? They're no longer as independent or third-party friendly with Oracle, right?
Absolutely. I think that all of those relationships will come under strain from this. There's no question about that. And it seems to me that it makes Oracle look a lot more like both IBM and Sun and EMC itself in terms of, you know, having some sort of competency in hardware. So, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, it may not look at it like it on the surface, but I think there are going to be a lot of far-ranging ripples from this relationship that are going to change the way the market functions.
Yeah, but Brad, I don't get a sense that Oracle's really trying to develop a competency in hardware. They've more or less outsourced all of that competency to their partners, HP and others. Though Ellison says this is, quote-unquote, Oracle's first hardware product. In fact, it's HP/Oracle brand. And also these Oracle optimized warehouses, which, you know, are primarily rolled out through, you know, EMC, Dell, HP, Sun, and so forth. Oracle has been providing those now for the better part of a year or more. So this is just, you know, this new one that they just announced is not technically an Oracle optimized warehouse, but it's like V2 of that whole partnering program for the data warehousing arena. And those are very much hardware solutions that Oracle markets.
Well, if they are talking, as you said, about expanding some of the fusion into the appliance area, then I think they are trying to get some sort of competency there, and who they'll do that with, I guess, probably hasn't been figured out. And in my mind, what matters most is, you know, for the customer, can they view Oracle as, you know, a vendor who can create these, or I should say, field these optimized environments that, companies like IBM have had so much success with.
All right. Now, it's also telling in how this is going to come to market. If you want to buy this, you actually have to go through the Oracle sales force. Oracle is going to support it and sell it, price it, and then HP is going to service the hardware. So in a sense, HP is the supplier to Oracle, and then Oracle is the principal vendor. Does that mean anything to anybody out there?
Well, you know, what it means is that Oracle is very much taking much more of a marketing lead on the HP Oracle database machine than it has with any of the Oracle-optimized warehouses. So, yeah, in a sense, it's the first hardware product that Oracle is stepping up and being sort of the primary partner doing the marketing. And so, in a sense, yeah, Oracle is very much staking its data warehousing go-to-market strategy to this new product and this renewed partnership with HP. That said, HP, it's really a lot of primary co-marketing and co-selling and cooperation on technical support. So HP is providing all of the level two technical support on the new products. And so it's not like Oracle is really becoming a hardware vendor. Rather, they are going to become very much a software vendor that has staked its future on delivery of its software on this one particular hardware partner's platform.
It really allows them to operate at a solutions level, but take quite a bit more of the margin across that total solution, right?
Right.
And that undercuts those other array providers significantly.
Right.
Okay, so let's talk about what you do with this thing. We heard that one terabyte size data set and higher starts hitting performance issues, and that then prevents companies from adding more queries and reduces the amount of additional data that they want to put into their warehouse. So we've hit a bit of a wall somewhere around one terabyte. This approach, this architecture and the hardware software optimization claims to blow that away, that it can deal with large sets up to 10 terabytes with very high performance. So what does this mean for business intelligence analytics? What does this mean for bringing more types of data and content into the warehouse? What are the business outcome benefits? Joe McKendrick, what's your thoughts from a BI perspective on this development in the market?
Well, it certainly moves the business intelligence arena forward. I think, you know, looking at what the rationale for having an appliance in this market versus what's been happening up to, you know, for the previous past decade with data warehousing, really says a lot about what's still needed in the market. Data warehouses, you know, when you get into the terabyte range, are simply too complex and require a high cost of ownership to put in place. It's made BI a fairly expensive proposition for companies going this route. And the cost of ownership, a lot of it is tied into the maintenance, the updates for the warehouse, the organizational effort and input required to make a data warehouse go. Now, there's a trend emerging. I'm sure Oracle has an eye on this as well, as toward open source, and you know, that's moved. That we're seeing more open source in the data warehouse too. There's some products.
Well, let's not overlook that Unbreakable Linux is inside the machine, right?
Exactly. But this is open source at the warehouse level itself, at the database level itself.
Right.
You know, my SQL, for example, has been pointing in this direction. Postgres QL as well.
Well, no, that's another interesting thing. Now, with Oracle and HP, why shouldn't we expect Sun to come out with something quite similar, but with MySQL and their processing and rack cooling, InfiniBand, and, of course, their storage?
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if we see some kind of response from Sun in this area, because Sun still makes its money off of hardware.
Right. Now, if Sun does that, then IBM will certainly come out with something around DB2. We should expect that, right?
Yeah. definitely. And I think there's an emphasis on simplifying data warehousing, making data warehousing simple for the masses. You know, Microsoft is, love them or hate them, they've been doing a lot of work in this area, increasing the simplicity of data warehouse and putting it, making it available at a more of a commodity level for the small to medium sized business space. We're going to see more open source in this space, and Oracle's looking at that as well.
All right, let's go to Jim Gabilis. Jim, if we can start taking 10 terabyte data sets and delivering analytics in near real time and deliver query results out to a myriad of business applications, if we can start looking at this as a cloud infrastructure where we're going to be providing data as a service, BI as a service even. Are we entering now an era if Sun and IBM and Hitachi and all these other guys start jumping out with these data warehouse appliances, they start beating each other up on price, the price comes down in the market. Are we entering the era of extreme BI?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, extreme BI, that's really simply BI and data warehousing with very large data sets with very demanding in real-time loading scenarios with terrific or very extensive concurrent usage and so forth. We're already in that era. I mean, if you look at what's going on in actual deployments, enterprise deployments, you mentioned like 1 terabyte, and then I heard 10 terabyte as being walls that are being hit. But those are, in fact, well within the capabilities of pretty much all the data warehousing solutions on the market. The vast majority of data warehousing enterprise deployments are between 5 and 15 terabytes. They're being handled quite well through a lot of the existing MPP and SMP systems that are on the market. But really what's coming along, and in fact it's already gotten well established in a number of leading edge deployments, are data warehousing and BI environments where you have hundreds of terabytes and up to the petabyte range and beyond in production. A lot of these are in the cloud already. I can't give names yet because there's a few things I know that I can't share, but in terms of very well-known Web 2.0 service providers who are already above the petabyte scale in terms of the amount of data they're persisting and in terms of the need and their ability to do continuous concurrent loads into those humongous data warehouses in real time from a variety of structured and unstructured sources. That's sort of extreme data warehousing environment where we have, of course, you might have millions upon millions of queries hitting that data warehouse all the time. This is already well established.
Are we taking it from the high end, roll your own, computer science, gee whiz level down to much more off the shelf forklift upgrade level? Won't this make a BI at extreme level much more of a, not a commodity, but perhaps something that's much more germane across many more types of organizations?
Oh yeah, for sure. It's bringing it down into the affordability range. It will eventually bring cloud DW down into the affordability range of the mid-market as well as large enterprises through subscription-based offerings in the cloud where the customer can, if they wish, they can redeploy their existing database licenses and their data into the cloud. The important thing, the other important announcement from my point of view this week at Oracle Open World was the fact that Oracle, now in conjunction with Amazon's Elastic Compute Cloud, Oracle customers, existing customers, can take their database licenses. They can move those licenses to be hosted in the cloud by Amazon EC2, and they can, using tools that Oracle's providing, also move their data, back it up, or move it entirely to be persisted in the cloud in Amazon's S3 service. Oracle very much is in the lead on doing that, and I strongly expect that the other leading enterprise DBMS vendors over time, in the next year or two, will offer a similar deployment flexibility for their data warehousing customers.
Okay, let's go to Dave Lithicum on that. Dave, familiarity with moving data around the cloud. It sounds like if people start getting comfortable with this from a risk, from a reliability, from a privacy and control issue, that it's a no-brainer to start moving fairly massive data sets for backup or extended enterprise sharing, federation, what have you, into cloud infrastructures. How important, from your perspective, is what Oracle announced in conjunction with Amazon this week?
I think it's very important. I think that the economics are there, that it's much cheaper to do cloud computing than it is on-premise stuff, and you can prove that out each and every time. What you run into an issue is around the cultural and, you know, kind of turf protection issues within the enterprises. And I think those are falling down as time goes on. I mean, go back in a time machine 5 years ago and you talk to them about running major enterprise applications delivered as a SaaS product, they would have laughed at you. And now today, you know, everybody's using Salesforce.com and just a bunch of other SaaS-delivered systems. So they're getting their mind around cloud computing, understand the concept of it. Moving information in the cloud is really, you know, not much of a leap. You already have customer information that exists on Salesforce and other SaaS providers out there. And I think that, you know, this is one step in the direction that, in essence, we're, you know, kind of going back in time a bit, you know, moving into the timeshare space, and a lot of things are going to be pushed back out into the universe, then through economies of scale, and also through, you know, the value of communities. It's just going to be a much more cheaper and cost-effective way of doing it. And I think it's going to be a huge push in the next 2 years.
Yeah. Now, does it seem reasonable that Oracle would test the waters on this in terms of market acceptance with Amazon, and then, you know, once people get a little bit more familiar and comfortable with it, come out with its own cloud offering?
Absolutely. I think that Oracle's going to have a cloud offering, IBM's going to have a cloud offering, Sun's going to have a cloud offering, and it's going to be the big talk and the big, you know, industry drive, you know, over the next 2 or 3 years, and I think they're just going to get out there and fight it out. And I think you're going to have a number of startups that are going to have huge cloud offerings as well that are going to contend with the big guys, and they can because it's fairly simple, you know, to put up infrastructure. It's fairly cost-effective, and you can get out there and start battling out with them. And quite frankly, I think maybe the more agile, you know, smaller companies may win that war.
All right, Brad Shimon, other news in recent times were we had quite a bit of virtualization and cloud discussion from VMware, from Citrix. We saw some acquisition from Red Hat that brings them into this hypervisor space. Maybe you could help our listeners understand a little bit better the relationship between a virtualization management and platform vendor and this whole notion of private or enterprise cloud. What's the relationship between the two?
Thanks. So, or, I mean, it depends on the perspective we have, right? If we're talking about virtualizing the data center or virtualizing the desktop or, you know, removing facets of the data center to the cloud, you know, I think if you're trying to kind of understand, you know, how, you know, as we were just talking about these smaller players being able to use things like EC2 to get into the market, if you're talking about that perspective, you know, from the cloud in, whether it's cloud desktop, cloud to data center, I guess that, you know, what I want to understand as a customer is, you know, not just what the SLAs are from these providers, whether it's IBM or Amazon. And by the way, another one we need to mention is Cisco, which, you know, using their WebEx platform is now wanting to be a software manufacturer with the SaaS platform and the SaaS solutions for the enterprise. But anyway, the point is that you know, as a customer, you don't want to just know what the five nines are. You want to know what sort of wrapper these vendors are putting around their solutions for things like security and policy management enforcement, so that you know, not just the fact that you're able to secure the data, but that you're able to control, manage the data, and have visibility into that data, whether it's something that's sitting in some sort of virtualized instance in your data center, or whether it's something that's sitting, you know, in some federated system that might be shared between Cisco and Amazon.
Yeah, now I found it interesting that these vendors are basically tripping over themselves, rushing out to the market way before these private clouds have even established themselves, but declaring that they have the infrastructure and the approach to do it. It sort of reminds me of a platform or even operating system land grab, that getting there first and establishing some de facto standards, coming up with industry common implementations, gives them an opportunity to set at least some level of format or portability benefits that would, of course, benefit them. This is a layer above the virtualization, but, you know, the virtualization is there to bring all that legacy stuff in. What do you do with the new apps? What do you do with the new services? Dave Linthicum, what's your thoughts on, in a sense, a meta operating system in the cloud and in a kind of a race to be first to that?
Yeah, I think that's a bit way off at this point. I think people are going to put aspects of the infrastructure up in the cloud first, and I think that platform as a service and the ability to provide a development infrastructure, storage infrastructure, some deployment infrastructure and things like that, it's going to be a bit mixed and matched. And I think people are going to do little tactical projects to kind of dip their toe in the water to see if it's viable. However, going forward, I think that's the destination. If you look at where everything is going, I think everything is going to be pushed up in the cloud. And people are basically going to have virtual platforms in the cloud, and that's how they're going to drive it. And just from a cost standpoint, everything we just discussed earlier, the advantages are going to be to those who get there first. And I think that, very much like the early adopters of the web, back in the 90s, this is going to be the same kind of a land grab and the same kind of a land rush that's going to occur. And ultimately, you're going to find 60 to 80% of the business processes, over the next 10 years are going to start being outsourced.
Now, what about this issue of data, which we've talked about, these massive data sets and bringing some of that up into a cloud? Is it going to be just easy standards-based interoperability for my data set and your data set to play among each other if we declare that an imperative? To what level are we hung up by different cloud implementations and therefore perhaps also different data implementations? Does that need to be solved?
Yeah, I think it does. I think that you're going to find the integration still needs to occur in the cloud just like it does within the enterprise, from enterprise to enterprise and intra-company and inter-company. And the reality is people have information up there with different semantics, different data formats, and all of that stuff has to be transferred one to another. I think that, the idea of integration in the cloud, which I've been involved with personally over the last 10 years a lot, may actually start to be used, and that people are going to have to do transformation, routing, flow control, filtering, all of these things as information moves between these partitions, out in the universe, and they never move into any kind of a server that is in your data center. But ultimately, integration needs to occur. I think it's going to be easier, and we know a lot more than we did, 15 years ago when I wrote the AI book. But I think that it's still going to be a needed and a necessary thing. So maybe integration in the cloud companies, should start pushing forward, because I think that may be a core need.
Yeah, I think that's I hear what you're saying. I think that's an important point to put forth, which is that these clouds, these data warehousing clouds, are data warehouses that are simply hosted external to the firewalls, to the intranets of the subscriber companies. And so, from the start, they're multi-tenant environments, and from the start of necessity, they are multi-domain, multi-entity data warehouses with strict separations between the various domains, which are often associated with particular customers. But then, when you're consolidating a lot of different organizations' information into a multi-domain data warehouse in the cloud, you still have that issue that a lot of that consolidation will happen to support like supply chain applications, where in the cloud it is probably the best place to put a lot of that data, so that companies and their suppliers and their customers all have access to a common pool of data in a common externally hosted environment. And what that raises then is that the data warehouse in the cloud really becomes a data federation in the cloud, or must. So all these disparate data sets with divergent schemas and so forth need to be normalized to a common semantic layer in the cloud provided by that cloud vendor. So there is an entree then for the data federation vendors that have not made had a huge footprint in the enterprise, for those guys then to provide their capabilities in the cloud for these types of, supply chain and B2B applications. I'm talking about companies like Composite Software and some others, where they have well-established data federations and semantic virtualization layers, and those guys need to get cracking to bring a lot of that into a cloud environment to enable this degree of data integration in that environment going forward and make it scalable.
All right, well, I think we're going to have to leave it there. We've been discussing announcements from Oracle OpenWorld in the virtualization space and how that relates to the future of extreme BI, the cost points and simplicity for large BI activities and data warehousing, and also into what a cloud infrastructure might look like from a variety of vendors. I want to thank our panel for joining us again for our Briefings Direct Analyst Insights Edition podcast series, Volume 30. We've been joined by Joe McKendrick. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Dana.
Brad Schimmann, thanks, Brad.
Thank you, Dana.
Jim Kabilis.
Always a pleasure.
And Dave Linthicum.
Thanks, Dana.
I want to thank our charter sponsor for supporting our podcast, Active Endpoints, makers of the ActiveVOS Visual Orchestration System, and Hewlett-Packard. We're coming to you via the HP Live podcast series as well as through the Briefings Direct Network. This is Dana Gardner, Principal Analyst at Inner Harbor Solutions. Thanks for listening, and come back next time.